Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting on the eve of a U.S.-China dialogue. President Donald Trump said Beijing's efforts to persuade North Korea to rein in its nuclear missile programs have failed. In a tweet, he said while he greatly appreciates the efforts of President Xi in China to help with North Korea, it has not worked out. He said, at least I know China tried. The president also called the death Monday of American student Otto Warmbier, medically evacuated last week from North Korea in a coma, a disgrace. His spokesman is Sean Spicer.
When you look at how he was handled, it's something that we will continue to apply economic and political pressure and try to continue to work with our allies. We've had, I think, positive movement on China over the past 5 months of this administration, and we'll continue to work with them and others to put the appropriate pressure on North Korea to change this behavior and this regime.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Chief Jim Mattis will sit down Wednesday with their Chinese counterparts in Washington, State Councilor Yang Jiechi and Chinese Army Chief General Fang Fenghui. The U.S. and North Korea will be a priority. Meanwhile, South Korea described as a grave provocation discovery of a North Korean drone near the demilitarized zone. According to the mayor, dozens of people were killed Tuesday in the Central African Republic town of Bria after fighting there erupted among rival factions. Many more were wounded. The violence took place just a day after the Bangui government and most armed factions signed a peace agreement in Rome. Thousands have died in sectarian and ethnic violence in the CAR since a Muslim alliance called Salika ousted the government of President Francois Bozizé in 2013. The fighting in Bria involved former Salika Muslim Alliance members and Christian anti-Balaka fighters. This is VOA News. The U.S. Defense Department said an American warplane downed an armed Iranian-made drone close to where U.S. personnel were training and advising rebel forces. The action took place near the Syria-Jordanian border, followed the downing of a pro-regime drone on June 8. It also followed Sunday's downing of a Syrian jet bombing close to U.S.-backed rebels in Raqqa province. That prompted a warning from Russia, which backs Syria in the conflict, that it would track U.S. coalition aircraft west of the Euphrates River. Heightened U.S.-Russia tensions has U.S. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres concerned.
These kind of incidents can be very dangerous in a conflict situation in which there are so many actors and in which the situation is so complex on the ground. So, indeed, I am concerned, and I hope that this will not lead to any escalation of a conflict that is already as dramatic as it is.
Meanwhile, airstrikes and artillery bombardments by Syrian forces resumed against rebels in Deraa, a city near Jordan. The U.S. has questioned the two-week-old diplomatic spat between Qatar and four other countries over its alleged support of terrorism. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said Washington is still waiting for an explanation of the grievances from Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Egypt over their breaking up diplomatic ties.
Numerous other calls have taken place with the leaders of UAE, Oman, Kuwait, Bahrain, and others. Now that it's been more than 2 weeks since the embargo started, we are mystified that the Gulf states have not released to the public, nor to the Qataris, the details about the claims that they are making toward Qatar. The more the time goes by, the more doubt is raised about the actions taken by Saudi Arabia and the UAE.
Qatar's foreign minister is to arrive in Washington next week for talks and has said Qatar will not negotiate a resolution of the dispute until its neighbors lift a trade and travel embargo. President Trump met at the White House Tuesday with his Ukrainian counterpart Petro Poroshenko, who praised U.S. support of Kiev in the conflict with pro-Russian separatists.
We really fighting to bring freedom and democracy. And I'm absolutely confident that our effective coordination can bring the peace to my nation, to my land, and can support our territorial integrity and sovereignty.
The White House said the discussion centered on support for a peaceful resolution to the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Meanwhile, the Trump administration announced sanctions on nearly 40 individuals and organizations over Russia's actions. The UN Security Council is to vote Wednesday on a French-sponsored draft resolution to back a West African force to combat terrorism, as well as arms, drug, and human trafficking in Africa's Sahel region. Republican Karen Handel defeated Democrat John Ossoff in a Georgia special congressional election to fill the seat vacated by Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations calls for international investigation into human rights violations in DRC's Kasai region.
This international investigation can establish the facts and determine individual responsibilities. By bringing justice to the Kasais, we may be able to prevent further crimes elsewhere in the DRC.
Zeyrat Al-Hussein is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. The DRC government says it welcomes international help in the investigation, but only if it is done through established DRC government judicial institutions. And the United Nations Population Fund says South Sudan refugees carried with them the trauma of abuse.
We have about 20,000 women that have visited our center. Those are women that report abuse. Now, it's important to know that before they cross the border, there's already a large amount of violence that they've been subject to.
Alain Sibenalo is the Uganda country representative for the United Nations Population Fund. Germany promotes more Africa investment as a strategy to stem migrant surge into Europe. And the trial has resumed of South Sudan government soldiers accused of raping five foreign workers and killing a local journalist. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is calling for an independent international investigation into human rights violations and abuses committed in the Kasai region of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The High Commissioner made his urgent plea on Tuesday to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein reports.
Last month, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zeyrat Al-Hussein gave Congolese authorities a June 8th deadline to join in an investigation with the UN to bring the perpetrators of human rights violations and abuses in Kasai to justice. The Congolese authorities rebuffed his plea, so the High Commissioner is now making good on his threat to urge the UN Human Rights Council to deploy an independent investigation.
I will also remain in touch with the International Criminal Court. This international investigation can establish the facts and determine individual responsibilities. By bringing justice to the Kasais, we may be able to prevent further crimes elsewhere in the DRC.
The UN reports a serious deterioration of the human rights situation in Kasai since August. That was when a tribal chief was killed by police and members of the army. That triggered revenge attacks and counterattacks between the chief's Kamuina Insapu militia and government security forces. Zaid says refugees from Kasai have told UN investigators harrowing tales of abuse by a Congolese-backed militia, the Bana Mura, against civilians from the Luba and Lulua ethnic groups, including reports of hundreds of villagers being shot, hacked, or burned to death.
Serious human rights violations by members of the security forces themselves, including summary executions and rape, have been reported during several operations against villages allegedly controlled by the Kamuina Nsapu militia.
The High Commissioner also accuses the Kamuina Nsapu militia of serious rights abuse. He says the militia allegedly has carried out targeted killings against members of the armed forces, police, public officials, and civilians, using children as young as seven. Zaid says the Congolese authorities have a duty to protect the people, and those who violate human rights principles must be brought to justice. The DRC Minister of Human Rights, Marie-Ange Mushobweka, says her country will continue to cooperate with the Human Rights Office. She says undisciplined Congolese soldiers who had opened fire on civilians have been identified and brought before the courts. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says it welcomes any international help in investigating the violence in the country's Kasai region. that has killed more than 3,000 people so far. But Information Minister Lambert Mende says any such inquiry must be conducted through DRC judicial institutions. This comes after UN Human Rights Commission Chief Zeyrat al-Hussein on Tuesday urged the UN Human Rights Council to mandate an investigation after the DRC government missed a deadline to agree to jointly investigate alleged massacres. The UN Human Rights Council in Geneva is due to decide this week whether to authorize an investigation into the Kasai violence. Information Minister Mende says the DRC is a sovereign state and any investigation that excludes the government will not be accepted.
We do accept the assistance of those experts from the UN Human Rights Commission, but they must work together with our judiciary. That is our position that they have been defended today in Geneva, and lucky enough, the Council for Human Rights of the United Nations agreed with it, and we are really happy that everybody followed that view of the government of the DRC. We are not a non-state country. There is institutions in our country, they are working, and we need people to assist them while they are trying to sue those people and to punish anybody who did anything against our people and against these two personnel of United Nations who died there in Kasai.
So the situation, Mr. Minister, is that perhaps the international community is feeling that your government's investigation has not been satisfactory.
Probably you don't have the good information. I think we have an evolution today, and we defeated that position in Human Rights Council today in Geneva. Everybody understood that this was not true. We have institutions. We are busy suing those people who killed some people. We are trying to arrest others. And the international community, as you call them, because we are also members of this international community. All of us decided today in Geneva that Congo deserved to be assisted. That is what have been decided. We know that our friends from Belgium are trying to push that Congo disappears, but they failed today. And we are happy with the decision that was taken today.
Mr. Minister, what do you make of the Catholic Church in your country in a report? I mean, the number of people that the church said have been killed in the Kasai region, about 3,000 or so people. And at some point, it accused your security forces of destroying at least 10 villages. Who is responsible for much of the violence there?
James, I read that report of Catholic Church. They didn't accuse security forces from Congo. I don't know where you get your information. They accounted about people who died in Kasai. Policemen, peasants, members of the civilian communities, and all of them amounted 3,000. It is what we read. So we are waiting for them to send us that report so that we can make some fact findings. But nobody in this report accused anybody. I think that it is a credible report, but they didn't accuse our security forces. It is not true.
Did your military or your security forces arm the Bana Mura militia that the United Nations says has carried out some horrific attacks?
This rumor, you know, raise another question. Why a government that have an army body, that have a police body, that have a security body, why does such a government need to have an armed group called the Bana Mura, or I don't know what to do what? For what purpose? Tell me, for which purpose? We have the army, we have the police, we have the security. So why should we need to create an armed group, an informal armed group, while we have a formal army under our control? It is stupidity, James. Totally stupid.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today's Wednesday, June 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Life in Lofa County, Liberia, Sports Radio Brela FM in Nigeria, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, and Sky 106.6 FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Daybreak Africa time now is 15 minutes past the hour. The nearly 1 million South Sudanese refugees in Uganda face shortages of food, water, and medical care, but they have also brought with them the trauma of the war they fled. Aid agencies are struggling to meet the need for counseling for survivors of gender-based violence. Halima Athumani reports from the Adjumani district of northern Uganda.
She was attacked in South Sudan 6 months ago, but she is still afraid to answer the door. VOA met this 35-year-old woman at the Pajirinya refugee settlement in Uganda. She spoke through a translator. She said she doesn't know if it was government soldiers or rebels. She says there were four of them who walked into my house, and one of them started raping me. The other three stood guard. After that, she says, they asked me for money. They started looking around and took 500 South Sudanese pounds and left. She said when her husband came home, she told him what had happened. He told her to leave or he would kill her. She arrived in Uganda in February. UN human rights officials said earlier this year that rape had reached epic proportions in the conflict in South Sudan. The impact is felt in the refugee settlements, though UN officials say funding for trauma counseling is insufficient. Alain Sebenela is the Uganda country representative of the UNFPA.
We have about 20,000 women that have visited our center. Those are women that report abuse, that talk about it. And that's, of course, very difficult to estimate how many more there are who have been silent. Now, it's important to know that before they cross the border, there's already a large amount of violence that they've been subject to. Now, that violence sometimes continues on their way to the settlement or is even perpetrated within the settlement.
VOA spoke to a community facilitator working with abused women in the settlements. He said he sees food shortages intensifying domestic violence. One 30-year-old refugee from East Equatoria told VOA about the abuse she faces. She has seven children, two of them from her previous marriage. She said her husband beats her when he sees her feeding them from the family's rations.
He
used a bamboo stick to beat me. He hit my hand and broke my wrist. He also hit my back. I'm always in pain. She says the day I returned from the hospital, he raped me, and while at it, he said, I want to see who will come and rescue you. You are my wife. She says she threatened once to report him to Ugandan police, but he told her he would cross back into South Sudan to evade capture. Uganda's government says it is aware of the problem of violence against women in the settlements. Minister for Refugees, Musa Echweru.
When they are struggling for resources in the areas that will give them, say, like water points, they become susceptible to all these kind of abuses. I have had to go sometimes as a minister responsible to speak very strongly to the refugees that some of you may have run from countries where law enforcement was weak. You have now run to a country where we take rights of others very strongly.
However, the minister said there have not been any recent arrests or prosecutions related to gender-based violence in the settlements. He said the government has placed priority on counseling survivors of abuse. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Adjumani, Uganda.
Women's health activists met this month in Uganda, where the country's abortion law is difficult to understand. Although Uganda allows abortions to save the life of the mother, healthcare providers are often arrested, says the Human Rights Awareness and Promotion Forum. The group says enforcement of the law violates women's rights and endangers their health. Executive Director Edwin Mwimbasa spoke with Ricky Stryak about the law.
And one of the issues that come up, of course, is abortion. So during recent affairs, journalists were now asking about what is really happening. I was looking at how laws, the criminal laws on abortion are being implemented in Uganda and how they affect women and health workers.
What are some of the main concerns in regards to the abortion laws in Uganda when it comes to women's reproductive rights and how they're affecting women's health?
In Uganda, what people generally believe is that abortion is illegal, although, yes, the law simply restricts abortion. Now, what happened is that there is a lot of unsafe abortion. Women engage in unsafe abortion, and this creates a lot of death, of course, injuries and damages, and then women can't access the services. Then there is a lot of stigma. So the law actually reinforces stigma and discrimination, and a lot of people have now to hide and engage themselves in unsafe means of abortion, which causes, of course, a lot of effects on their health, on women's health. But also, the laws, how they are implemented by law enforcement agencies, are also not implemented in a way that they're supposed to be implemented, because people have this background of defining abortion as something immoral, something culturally unacceptable. So they go in full force. And then in the process of arrest and the detention, they violate a lot of rights for women and health workers who are.
Did you guys encounter in your research that a lot of women were getting unsafe abortions because of the abortion law in Uganda? And how did that impact especially poorer women?
Yes, the truth is that actually a lot of women are engaging in abortion. The figures now, which are official, over 300,000 abortions take place in Uganda every year. And this is information that is actually obtained from the Ministry of Health. But then also the rate of unsafe abortion, because most of that information is actually collected through post-abortion care, meaning that people first go and try out the abortion, and then they are referred now to health centers where they get post-abortion care. So, and then also, our maternal mortality and self-abortion actually contribute a high percentage to our maternal mortality. The recent figures are saying that 26% of maternal deaths in Uganda are caused by self-abortion.
That was Edward Mwimbaza, Executive Director of the Human Rights Awareness and Promotion Forum. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Uganda's capital, Kampala. Germany's chancellor is calling for the world's richest nations to take a new approach to foreign investment and aid in Africa. The so-called Merkel Plan is calling for more investment in Africa as a way of stemming African migration to Europe. From Johannesburg, viewers Anita Powell looks at what is driving this strategy.
Germany's new focus on boosting African economies is no act of charity, the nation's foreign minister has said. It is an essential move to stem the flow of economic migrants from Africa to Europe. This week, Foreign Minister Gerhard Müller said he feared 100 million African refugees might come to Germany if nothing is done. Chancellor Angela Merkel has vowed to invest $335 million to attract foreign investors to Africa and will try to convince the other 19 nations attending the G20 summit in July to show greater commitment to the continent's struggling economies. Germany has identified four countries as its focus: Ivory Coast, Morocco, Rwanda, and Tunisia, but has also had discussions with other African leaders. The head of the Economic Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs, Talitha Bertelsmann-Scott, says Germany has worked hard to overcome its violent African colonial past and emerge as a business leader.
Germany has given so much, has been very inspiring in terms of how it emerged after the Second World War as this leading manufacturing powerhouse. And Africa is really looking towards ways in which they can industrialize, and Germany does give leadership here.
But she said she has some reservations about the plan outlined by Germany's finance ministry, which she says did not involve any consultation with African nations. Analyst Mark Zander leads business consultancy Africon, a Germany-based company that focuses on helping businesses set up in sub-Saharan Africa. He says German companies are looking to make serious, long-term investments, and more are looking each day. He spoke to VOA from Stuttgart, Germany.
A lot of German companies are still family-owned. So their approach to the African region might, on the one side, be very cautious. But on the other side, a lot of German companies do properly work on the strategies and also think long-term.
CEO of the Berlin-based German African Business Association, Christoph Kannengießer, says about 600 German companies are already working on the continent, and he expects that number to grow. The continent's booming population and growing consumer base make it an attractive business destination, he says.
The new German approach to Africa is, first of all, to accept and to take into consideration much more that Africa is a political and economic factor, and that Germany should strengthen the ties to Africa and build up more and more intensive relations to Africa in general and to important African countries. And I think the second aspect is that we recognize Africa as a continent of economic opportunities and that we should engage as well.
The two-day G20 summit will be held July 7th and 8th in Hamburg. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Government soldiers accused of raping five foreign aid workers and killing a local journalist at the Turin Hotel last July appeared in a military court in Juba on Tuesday. The case resumed after a two-week delay. Presiding Judge Knight Brownie adjourned the trial to give the new military prosecutor more time to study the case and to transport key witnesses to Juba. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
A court official calls the courtroom to order at the start of today's trial. Lieutenant Colonel Mayer Jack, the new chief military prosecutor, presented documentary evidence, including medical reports of the victims. Jack also presented the death certificate of John Gatluak, the journalist who was murdered on July 11, 2016. Witnesses said men in uniform attacked the Terrain Hotel for several hours. The case is seen as a test of the Kiir administration's ability to try war crimes. Judge Brownie allowed defense lawyer Lieutenant Peter Malual Deng's request for the prosecution to produce an autopsy report of the murdered journalist. Acting SPLA spokesman Colonel Santo Domic says jurors will be taken to the site of the attack next month.
On Monday, 3rd July, there is going to be a site visit to Terrain site where the prosecution and the defense with the court will have to visit the site so that they see things and all the damages for themselves.
Domic says court proceedings were adjourned to allow the prosecutor time to gather witnesses from both inside and outside the country.
Most of the witnesses and the victims are still outside the country. In the totality of 60 witnesses, only six are foreigners, are still outside the country. But the rest could be found inside South Sudan and maybe from the neighboring countries in East Africa.
All of the soldiers on trial pleaded not guilty. Domic says the courts will decide their guilt or innocence.
There has been a lot of debate over the ranges of the accusations that have been leveled against the suspects, from killing to rape and to stealing of properties. But of course, this is left for the court to judge later on when it comes to cross-question in the presence of the eyewitnesses that are going to give their testimony and the victims themselves.
Witnesses called UN peacekeepers stationed 1 mile away in a desperate plea for help, but no one came, according to witnesses. The military chief of the peacekeeping mission in South Sudan was fired, and the political chief resigned. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says it welcomes any international help in investigating the violence in the country's Kasai region that has killed more than 3,000 people so far. But Information Minister Lambert Mende says any such inquiry must be conducted through DRC judicial institutions. And that's it for this Wednesday, June 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Button in Washington saying have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. Mobile, mobile. African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.